Is there a better way to get around in Anchorage? Good morning and welcome to Talk of Alaska. I'm Steve Heimel. When my friends from the bush come into town, I don't get to see much of them because they are out shopping for entirely too much of their time. Does Anchorage need more buses or cabs or a new kind of car fleet? Our number 1-800-478-8255, toll-free, that's 478-TALK, toll-free. In Anchorage, a local call of 550-8422, email talk@APRN.org. If you were talking to Mayor Dan Sullivan about what you would ask for, what would it be on Talk of Alaska statewide?
Today's program is underwritten in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
All right. With us by telephone is the Executive Director of Transportation for America, James Corliss. James, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Well, hi, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Now, as I understand it, your organization is a sort of enormous coalition of interests that are assembling around the periodic reauthorization of what we used to call the highway bill.
That's right. Every 6 years, Congress rewrites the highway bill, as you say, what it used to be called. Now we call it the transportation bill. And either this year, probably more likely next year, is the year. And even though it's once every 6 years, we think this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to really do something different in regards to transportation.
Well, now, as you probably know, the former chairman of the House Transportation Committee is from Alaska, Don Young, and he had great pride of ownership in the existing highway bill and all the things that it did, or as I believe it was called even then, the transportation bill. So what's wrong with that?
Yeah, that's right. And certainly Don Young did the last bill, so-called Safety Lou. You probably listeners know, or maybe they don't, that the Lou was actually named after his wife. All these little pieces of trivia when it comes to transportation bill. Look, we finished the interstate highway system that President Eisenhower set out to build in 1956. We finished that in 1991, thereabouts. A little dig in Boston that took a few years longer and about $12 billion. But all told, that was done. And then from the early 90s to really present day, we had this notion that we would sort of have a post-interstate transportation policy. But that never really materialized, and with all Don Young did amazing thing as all those folks do to pull people together and get a transportation bill through Congress. But most people will tell you, even nationally, we've kind of lost our way in transportation policy. And I have to bring it up: the Bridge to Nowhere was the one thing in the campaign, the presidential campaign last year, that, you know, very few times does transportation get mentioned in a presidential election. Unfortunately, it was a negative thing. These earmark projects, which was sort of what people know the federal transportation program for. So we need to get beyond that. I don't know if we'll get rid of earmarks, but we need to have, I think, a vision and a purpose again, like we did in 1956 with the interstate highways, something to define the 21st century.
And indeed, you have, and I, you know, certainly for. People interested in livability, these principles that you're going on seem quite reasonable. Perhaps you know, people would quibble with the one about let's try and make the whole transportation complex start reducing their greenhouse gas emissions. That might be thought to be a difficult goal. But
we don't think it is. I mean, we you know, as you're reading from, I mean, we have a list of, I think, goals and objectives. I mean, we want to tell the American people what they're buying for their dollar. And, look, that's partly about trying to make it easier to get around in your car, but it's got to be more than just that. We think we have to have a truly multimodal system, which I know in Alaska, between planes and ferries and highways and sleds and everything else, you know, you really need. And we think we need that for the rest of the country as well.
Well, you know, in the largest city in Alaska, with half the people in Alaska, you know, it's kind of a small city compared to others, but still it's the biggest one we got. And it's taken on, as the years have gone by and I've watched it, it's taken on a little bit more maturity than it once had as a livable place. So there's a very active bicycle push now. The bicycle people are active and going for more realistic transportation corridors that they can use. And there's a little pressure on the mass transit, but not a whole lot. And there's also a sort of natural clustering of the residential that's taking place just because I think of the price of fuel, that people are very interested in living closer to where they work. And because our biggest biggest employment center in Anchorage now is actually in Midtown instead of downtown, it actually is kind of realistic for some of the housing stock. The value of all that housing stock in that vicinity has been going way up, while the value of the outlying housing stock is not doing so well. So it seems that we got certain things to work with here, certain forces that are in operation, at least in this one city. And the question I wanted to propound to our listeners, particularly those who come into this city from the bush, is what would you like? What do you need? Do you need your shopping all to be clustered in one place? Do you need your own car? Would better buses work for you? Is there some other mode of transportation that you need to do the things that you do when you come through the city? Because you almost certainly from any place but Southeast, you almost have to pass through Anchorage to go anywhere else. So that's our question. And these other things, they just seem to be kind of coming along, like complete streets for things besides cars, so that bicycles and walking and everything is also, you know, and transit is accommodated, putting a stress on residences closer to where people work. And then this is interesting, federal assistance for actually operating public transportation. So it's not just the capital of public transportation, but the actual operating expense you'd like to get the feds involved in?
That's right. And actually, I tell you, Representative Young has been very, very strong on this issue. We at the federal level, we haven't paid the actual money to run the trains and buses to local governments or states since the mid-1990s. And it's kind of an artifact, in some cases, maybe a conscious policy decision. But, you know, we're very good at building things in this country, building new stuff, and there's nothing wrong with that. But we're not very good at maintaining it. And, you know, one of the first things we think we need to do is actually fix the system we have, you know, take care of our streets and our roads and our highways and our transit systems and our bridges. Because if you look at any report card that anybody gives this country for infrastructure, it's about a C or a D. The C is the rosier projection. So the first thing we need to do is really emphasize repair and maintenance. And that goes for transit as well. And in my mind, repair and maintenance on the transit system is just operating the buses and the trains, if you have them, more frequently and making sure that there's actually a convenient bus. I'd love to know from your listeners in a place like Anchorage that I visited, what would it take for you to ride public transportation? Look, in some cases, we're not offering very good service to people. You know, we're not being as customer-friendly as we could be. I don't know the case in Anchorage or Alaska. But,
well, they both say basically it's once an hour. So
it's hard to rely on a bus that comes once an hour.
It means that people have to really think about, you know, their transportation arrangements if they're going to use the bus, basically. And that's, if it's a direct trip, sometimes you need two buses in order to get to wherever it is you're going. Well, our first our guest is James Corliss, Executive Director of Transportation for America. And you would not believe the number of interests in this coalition. This is an enormous coalition that's interested in modernizing, I guess you would say, rewriting the highway bill. If you don't know what the transportation bill is, and they used to call it the highway bill and they don't anymore, some years ago, it's the law that required if it's a federal highway, you had to have a bike trail next to the road. People are still upset about that one. The idea is to make it more consonant with where we're going as a modern world, a modern country. Our first email response is in from Kevin from Fairbanks. He says, it's fortuitous you're talking about traffic in Anchorage today. Just a week ago, I was in Anchorage. I got horribly tied up in the endless back and forths in town. What Anchorage needs is a redesign of its roads, especially its one-way roads. Barring this, Salt Lake City had a light rail system called the Tracks built for the Olympics that I think would translate very well into downtown Anchorage. Downtown Salt Lake City is very comparable to Anchorage. So says Kevin out of Fairbanks. So, yeah, the minute you do light rail, you're talking pretty substantial capital investment, aren't you?
Sure, you're talking substantial capital investment, but you don't have to think of light rail as kind of monolithic. I'll tell you what's fascinating among many trends now in smaller cities is the revival of streetcars, trolley cars. A lot of cities are putting in smaller, and here's what's cool about this. They're buying old vintage cars, sometimes from third world countries that we sold them to 30 years ago, and we're refurbishing them. The tracks are cheaper. It takes less wear and tear on the pavement. And the other thing you got to remember about light rail is you may think, well, it's a big upfront investment. It actually builds value in the land. So one of the ways to finance light rail or streetcars is to actually get some of the increase in the value of that land sitting next to those future stations to plow that back into some of the capital debt. Portland, Oregon has done a great, great example of this. They've got both streetcar and light rail. Their streetcar was financed from parking garage revenues, from the increase in the value of the land. If you haven't been down there, I really encourage you to do it.
All right. We have a comment from Girdwood. You probably know where Girdwood is then, James.
Sounds familiar. I got to get my map out again.
It's one of the most gorgeous drives in the country. It's just basically going up, turning an arm, and then you get to Girdwood, which is where there's a ski resort. And some people have to commute into Anchorage. And Leslie from Girdwood points out, Anchorage is one of the few cities anywhere in the world where you can't take a train or bus from the airport. Both for locals, business travelers, and tourists, this is a major flaw. The cab driver's special deal is an antiquated idea in this modern era of public transportation and a major flaw in the system. So, and we're one of those communities where the airport is actually in town. And they still don't really have I think there is a bus, but I'm not 100% even on that. I should know, but I just don't.
I thought they had one of the commuter rail lines out there, or some rail line, no?
Funny, you should bring that up.
Neither one of us know.
Well, actually, yeah, I know about that one. That's the Alaska Railroad, and it has a terminal there, but it's only used for cruise ship passengers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it was designed. So when there's not cruise ship passengers using it, they lease it out for people to have weddings in and so forth. Very nice building, and the rails go right to the airport, obviously. So it would seem there would be some potential to actually do something more with that.
I see. I remember seeing it when I came in from the airport one time. Look, one of the things that's amazing about this notion of infrastructure and are we modern or not is you can never will you see a jaw drop more than when you go with a member of Congress to a country like China, and they get off the plane and they see not only light rail and aerial trams, but subways, but high-speed trains. They're not even talking about it. They've built it in China. They're building it. You know, our competitors are now outpacing us in many ways. And, any kind of a modern city, even Anchorage or other smaller cities, it just makes sense that you, when you get off the airport, you have ways to get into the city, and that's part of a connected system. We have to begin thinking big and envisioning those kinds of things.
Well, you know, I've been talking about what we can do with our existing railroad in Alaska, which, as you probably know, was built by the federal government long ago and is the reason that the city of Anchorage even exists. And I have friends that work for the railroad in various capacities, including executive, and they say the real problem is the way that it was designed, that you just can't go real fast on it the way that it was designed. I mean, you would never put a bullet train on there. There's just too many curves and so forth for it to work.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about mostly Amtrak system. If you've been down to the lower 48 and trundled along on Amtrak, it's you could walk as fast on most of those corridors. The one place that Amtrak works, and I was in California. I just moved back to Washington D.C. Between New York and Washington, you're approaching we're not even as fast as the Europeans or the Chinese or Japanese, but you're approaching about 130 miles an hour, roughly give or take 10, and that beats driving by far. And that corridor makes money for the rest of the Amtrak system. We need to think about these regional networks of high-speed trains, not cross-country trains that travel at 10 miles an hour, but, you know, the Midwest, California, Seattle, Portland, and Vancouver, the New England. Those kinds of networks, Florida, Texas, make a lot of sense in the 21st century, and we need to begin thinking about how to finance those and actually build them.
You know, and it comes to mind, you see among commuters a whole bunch of them, and they're already starting to do business. They're already, like, with the headset deals in the cars or with the cell phones. And you kind of wonder, you know, hey, if you were in a train, you could be doing your work and you wouldn't have to worry about distractions and the other drivers wouldn't have to worry about you.
Yeah, that's right. There was actually a train between San Francisco and Sacramento, California now. It's the third busiest Amtrak corridor in the country, which is almost every half an hour, and it is a fantastic ride. It's not operated by Amtrak, and you get your work done. I mean, it doesn't go. Now, they got to improve the speeds on that corridor, too, so it becomes more competitive, and they're getting Wi-Fi on board, so...
Well, I'm sure if nobody else does, I'll go ahead and bring this up. The so-called Highway Trust Fund that funds the transportation bill, that's funded through a federal tax on fuel. So isn't there some justice in a vehicle user saying, hey, wait a minute, you're taking money from me, you're taking a tax that I pay on the gas that I buy to drive my car and putting it into some bike trail or something. Where's the...
This is the big argument in Washington. It's the argument we hear from a lot of the highway lobby groups. We're not talking about not funding highways or roads or infrastructure, but we are talking about funding a more diverse portfolio. If you look at the, not just federal, but federal, state, and local sources of revenue for roads, it's not all funded by gas tax revenues, number one. A lot of it is property tax, sales tax, state general funds, income taxes. Number two, I would argue as a driver myself that fills up my tank all the time, even if I'm not the one getting off the road in a high speed train or a transit system, somebody else is. And for too long, we've siloed this approach to transportation. We have a separate highway account, separate transit account, separate highway federal agency, a separate federal transit agency. We were really good at siloing and creating bureaucracy. We want a unified transportation trust fund that all people pay into. And we want a strategy that is actually smarter for everybody, sometimes roads, sometimes rails, sometimes air. Sometimes more walkable neighborhoods with stuff you can actually walk to for your kids or if you're seniors or anybody. We don't have that now. And that disjointed approach, that siloed approach, has really given us a lot of problems. So,
did you note back in June that the head of the EPA and the Secretaries of Transportation and Housing and Urban Development all agreed to work together and use livability principles for their policy setting?
Oh, we sure did, absolutely. And I think the only other department we'd like to see in there actually is Health and Human Services. I mean, if it's ironic to us that we've got a health care bill being debated right now where the fix is somewhere south of a trillion dollars. But a lot of that, I mean, not all of it, but a lot of that actually could be taken care of by making sure... And the federal government's not going to do all this, but they can provide some leadership and incentives for the states and locals that we have more walkable communities, that we have more trails, that physical activity is a routine part of actually not just recreation, but transportation, getting
so,
from point A to point B.
So for things like obesity, blood pressure, cardiovascular, there's a number of things for which just more exercise is a great preventive health measure.
I mean, what's interesting to us, and we have the Kaiser Foundation, we got a lot of the healthcare foundations funding our work and a lot of other people's work. Because
I noticed that, yeah.
All these doctors now are saying they're prescribing exercise for their patients, and their patients say, well, I'm too busy to go exercise. And they say, well, can you work it into your day somehow? And the patient says, well, I could, but I can't get there from here, or it's too dangerous, or my kid really needs to exercise, but it's too dangerous. I don't want them crossing the street by themselves.
So eventually it starts interfacing with this transportation planning issue. Yeah, I have that. My neighborhood is Spinard Road. I got to walk down Spinard Road. I mean, you try walking down Spinard Road. The only thing worse is trying to bicycle down Spinard Road.
And again, it's not that. I mean, this is about trying to make a system that's more balanced for all users. So we've got to make sure we're paying attention to people commuting by car. We've also, though, got to make sure that if you want an option, it's easy to walk or to bike. Sometimes it won't be all the time. But for a lot of those trips, especially the short trips, the errand trips, you know, commuting now is less than 20% of all trips.
Is that right?
Most trips now are all the other little stuff that all of us have to do every day.
Well, if you're a hockey mom.
You got it.
If you're a soccer mom.
You know it. You live the life.
Jennifer of Anchorage, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Oh.
Hiya. How are you, Jennifer?
Sorry. I was waiting to go online. Great. Thank you for taking my call.
Okay. Well, what have you got for us?
Well, I've been in Anchorage. I've been in Alaska altogether for about 13 years, and I've been in Anchorage for about 4. I also lived in Fairbanks for about 3, which is another place that's difficult to get around, but. Originally, I grew up in Toronto, Canada, and that has an excellent public transportation system. I actually didn't have to learn how to drive until I came to Anchorage. We didn't have a car growing up because the transportation system allowed us to get anywhere from anywhere in Toronto to anywhere in Toronto very easily, and for very cheap, too. It was about, I guess it was about a dollar or something like that at the time, but... Anyway, it was just, it was really great. And, you know, I've also lived in London where in Toronto there's the streetcars and subways and buses. And I know that's not necessarily going to happen here in Anchorage, but it just makes for a much better life, I guess, because you don't have to pay for a car, you don't have to pay for gas. You just pay, you know, the dollar or whatever to get around. It saves on fossil fuels and... it saves money in your wallet. Here in Anchorage, I haven't really taken the bus too much because I can't depend on it. But my mother takes the bus, and she's noticed that at a certain point during the day, the bus system stops, and then also on the weekends. Toronto, you didn't really have to wait very long for a bus either. And that was one of the first things I noticed when I came to Alaska. In Alaska, you have to wait, like you said, about an hour. In Toronto, it's only about, maximum about 10 minutes.
Yeah, so if you miss one, it's not really a big deal, even if you've got something you have to be to. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Anything more, Jennifer?
Well, just then, you know, you get a transfer if you want to go to another line, and the system was very well integrated. So, anyway.
I think we got a ways to go in our biggest city in Alaska, don't you?
Yes, definitely.
All right.
But, you know, it's. I think it's really positive that you guys are bringing this up and you're talking about this and letting people comment like this.
Yeah, and the money's there. The money's there, and it's more a planning and coordination thing. And
right,
I think, you know, some of our problems actually have to do with design. And, and there's things we can do in design, you know, right now. We just start thinking about it differently. All right, thanks for your call.
Thank you very much.
Our telephone number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, a local call in Anchorage at 550-8422, and email is talk@aprn.org, which usually comes in handy later on in the program. James Corliss, Executive Director of Transportation for America, is with us. So let's say you try and push forward with your initiative, say, next year. Do you think you have a friendly reception, friendlier in the Senate or in the House? Do you have a committee chairman that's willing to introduce this bill?
Well, it's this is a must-pass bill, right? I mean, Congress does this every 6 years. Representative Oberstar, Chairman James Oberstar from Minnesota, is the chair of the House Transportation Committee. He's introduced a bill in the subcommittee in the House, which is a good start. It's got a lot of holes in it. There's no dollar figures. There's no formulas. There's none of the details. But it's a good start. And in the Senate, It's Senator Boxer from California, who writes what we call the highway title. It includes a lot more than highways. And then Senator Dodd from Connecticut that does the mass transit title. So, I mean, those are all senators, I think, that are interested and open and sort of amenable to different ideas. But I got to tell you, this is not high on Congress's radar screen or their priority list.
No, it's not even on the president's list right now.
It isn't, unfortunately. I mean, you know, health care, the climate bill, those things are kind of nudging it out. So that's always the danger. It's so interesting. You know, transportation is always one of the hottest local issues.
Mm-hmm.
It never bubbles up, though, to really become a national issue.
All right. I want to pull in another guest, but first let's try another call here. Charles in Koyuk has been holding on for a bit. Charles, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you for having me. I lived in Alaska for 25 years, five of which was in Anchorage. And I've kind of noticed a consistency throughout the state that you'll find within the cities, sort of, they're all sort of analogous to one another, and that's, it begins with a foundation, and not to sound too negative, but everything's very spread out. There's various points of interest, but what's in between them, between point A and point B, is just so spread out. Like, for example, you have downtown, you have midtown, and you have Diamond, which are various points of interest for not only local citizens, but also tourists. And everything in between, which is miles and miles apart.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah, and now I like I said, I lived in Anchorage for 5 years. I went to UAA, and I had 3 years without a car. Now, so I dealt with the public transportation system, and it wasn't very satisfying, I'll say. I mean, you couldn't really walk from campus to anywhere else. And I went to an event at the Sullivan Arena in January and missed the bus and had to walk back from the Sullivan Arena back to campus.
And, it's a little bit harsh.
Yeah, it was. It was a little bit harsh. I managed to somehow catch a bus over it by Century 16, but still, I think, not to sound too negative, but I think it begins with where they set things up in the city. You have, like, the shopping centers downtown, you have the university in the middle of town, and then you have the Diamond Mall at the other end of town, and there's just so much of nothing in between except the occasional strip mall and maybe housing projects you don't want to get caught at the wrong time of night in.
Yeah, there's industrial sites all over the place, too.
There is, and I mean, it's a working state, so you can't fault them for putting in industrial sites or
not at all.
Areas, but I mean, if you look at the maps of successful cities with transportation, quality transportation is sort of like a central hub, and it works outward. And I think the problem with Alaska is that it's just like major point, major point, major point, and then just like I said, a bunch of business in between.
Well, you know, but in the East Coast, you can go to city after city after city and find that there's nothing going on in the center of the city. You know, people couldn't sustain retail there. And a lot of them lost their mass. I think the only way that you bring this back is with a more vigorous transportation. You have to have residential someplace around that center, too.
Your caller brings up a good point, though, which is that a lot of the transportation system is there, of course, to serve the type of development pattern and land use that you've planned for. And a long time ago, we separated uses, especially in the 19th century when we had a very dirty industrial economy. We separated, you know, commercial from residential for good reason, for health reasons. And a lot of that codes and zoning and regulation, though, has been carried forward to a modern American suburb now is totally isolated from shopping, from jobs, through all these kind of zoning codes. And a lot of the problem does start very locally.
Yeah.
You have to drive between all those things.
Yeah, and now these cities are starting to, the revitalization of the cities has often taken a greening of the old industrial sites, which turn into really valuable real estate if you can plant some artists or whatnot in there that can actually start make something happen.
Well, I got to tell you, after coming back to Washington, D.C., after being gone 10 years, I'm kind of absolutely dumbfounded by just the revitalization of Washington. So something demographically and just consumer preference-wise, and we're building suburbs, we're going to build suburbs, there's nothing wrong with suburbs, but people are moving back to cities as well, and we're finding a lot of the baby boomers now. They want convenience. They want a place. They're downsizing and looking for something that, they want a car, but they want an option to be able to have other things around them. They can take public transportation or walk.
All right. Thank you. Charles, thanks for your call from Koyuk.
Thank you very much, and I hope there's a solution.
I think we all have to kind of work together and do it step by step. It's Talk of Alaska, and our guest is James Corliss, Executive Director of Transportation for America, as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from First National Bank Alaska, branches in 18 communities around the state and on the web at fnbalaska.com, member FDIC, equal housing lender. And by Alaska Communication Systems, converging voice, video, internet, and data applications for business with data transfer speeds up to Gig E. ACS, connecting Alaska companies to each other and the rest of the world.
It's Talk of Alaska, the subject, transportation in Anchorage from a Bush, Alaska, point of view. And this next comment comes from Fairbanks, and it's about Fairbanks, but applies the same in Anchorage, I think. It's about the bumpy bike paths. The State Department of Transportation seems to put a very low priority, says Tom in Fairbanks, on bike path maintenance. In Fairbanks, they resurfaced several miles of the Steese Highway, but did nothing to the adjacent bike path except tear it up some more during the work. They'll patch cracks in Farmers Loop Road, but not the same crack in the adjacent bike path. Deep, wide cracks completely across a path are left year after year, cracks that, if proportionately as large on a road, would cause an emergency closure and repair. It's impossible to ride a road bike at any speed on most Fairbanks paths. It seems DOT managers have little interest in bike paths and use lack of money as an excuse to do as little as possible in maintaining those they're forced to put in along roads. So there's that resentment of the bike path issue that you, that James Corliss, you've heard before, I think.
Absolutely. But at the same time, I think it goes to show you that we're way behind in just maintaining the system we have. And that's whether it's a local road or a bike path, we're not keeping up with maintenance. And, you know, I don't want to make this sound too easy. Maybe it's nobody's lulling themselves into that. But you said the money's there. Honestly, at the federal level, the money really isn't there. I mean, the revenues into the federal trust fund for transportation are declining. We haven't raised the gas tax since 1993. Here's the difficult piece, which is if we want a better transportation system, we're going to have to pay for it. And that's never easy for members of Congress.
All right, thank you. Well, you're in agreement with Don Young on that one too, aren't you?
I'm agreeing with Representative Young on all these things.
Let's go now to another guest. Let's turn to the area of private transportation once again. We've talked a lot about buses and so forth, but what about your vehicle? Let's suppose it wasn't your vehicle, but partly your vehicle and other people's vehicle as well. This is happening. Car sharing is happening in more and more communities across the country, and one of the most advanced programs is in the Bay Area. We'll talk now with Anita Daly. She's Membership Development and Outreach Director for City Car Share. Anita, welcome to Talk of Alaska.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. Now tell me, Anita, if I were calling on behalf of the City of Anchorage and wanting your help in setting up a car share program, what would be the kind of questions you would ask to see whether we would be a suitable candidate for this sort of system?
Well, first of all, if it were the city calling, I would ask the city what their overall green goals are and to make sure that they have those established. And it's not only the green goals need to incorporate all forms of transit, including all the transit options that you were talking about, biking, bike paths, walking, public transit, and have a good, solid support for those types of infrastructure projects. And then I would ask them to define car sharing and use the resources of the car sharing industry out there to determine what it is and I'm happy to discuss that definition. And then there are many ways that they can do to support it. Like I said, support the infrastructure for all alternative transit projects. Also to provide free parking, because parking is a big cost for car share providers. To make sure that the taxes for car sharing are not the same for taxing of car rental agencies, which is usually higher. And then there's also options that they can do internally with their own fleets. For example, governments can retire some of their fleet cars and use car sharing vehicles instead, where the employees of the city can share cars with the public, and it would decrease the city's cost while also subsidizing the startup of a new car share program.
Okay, well, let's take a step back, and how does it work? In other words, do I join a club? If I wanted to have shared to share a car, basically, so that I didn't have to garage it and whatnot and deal with the overhead of owning a vehicle, normally I would rent. So this is something other than renting.
This is very different from renting, and we try very hard to ensure that people understand the differences. I'd like to first just describe what car sharing is. And that is, car sharing is a service that provides members with 24/7 access to a fleet of dispersed, conveniently located vehicles that are unattended. So basically, when you're a member, what you do when you want to use a car is you reserve a car online, or we also have a phone access as well, and for however long you need it, from whatever location you want it from. You go to the car, you access it. We have a little electronic key fob that we give to each member. Each member has their very own, and they enter the car with a key fob. They get in, and then the ignition key is inside the car, and they just start it up and drive away. And then when they're done with their trip, they return it to the same place.
Okay, so it's so there has to be a parking place then for this vehicle, and then people go to the parking place and access the vehicle.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I mentioned that cities can do to support car sharing is to provide parking spaces for car share providers, because believe it or not, even though with the service, with that hourly, and sometimes some providers have mileage fees as well, gas, insurance, and maintenance are included with that price. But for us, City Car Share in San Francisco Bay Area, our biggest cost is parking. So that's one huge thing that cities can do to support car sharing.
Wow. And then you mentioned this business of city fleets actually managing to retire some vehicles because of car sharing?
Yes, we have a program, for example, in Berkeley, California, where the city of Berkeley has retired five of their vehicles, and their employees sign up under their account with City Car Share, and then whenever they need a car for a meeting, for example, they can reserve one online. They go to that car, use it, and return it. And then the city of Berkeley has cars with City Car Share set aside. There's a certain number that only employees can access from Monday through Friday from 9 to 5. And then in the evening and on the weekends, all City Car Share members can access those cars.
Do you think there would be a way of
money?
Do you think there would be a way of making a vehicle pool for bush Alaskans who maybe only need the vehicle once a month?
Well, it depends on how long they need the vehicle. If you're talking about for a day or a few days, I would say that would be more of a car rental model.
Right.
Than car sharing. Car sharing is more hourly. And for us at City Car Share, the key indicator of success for us is how many times the same car is used. So on a busy Saturday, for example, one car will be used by five different people for their Saturday errands, for example. So if you think about those five people each giving up a car or not buying a car in the first place to use that one car, that's, you know, four parking spaces that are saved in that neighborhood.
Well, what do you do about the Saturday problem? I would think there'd be a lot of people that wanted to use a fleet car at the same time.
Well, as a nonprofit, we're very, very, very careful about capacity, and we have members that are using cars, and the demand increases, then we add another car to that same location, and we'll also add cars a block or two away. In fact, that's how we grow. We started along the main transit corridors, in San Francisco, it's a Muni and the BART system. And then as members joined and used those cars and the capacity increased, we increased the number of cars as well, and now we're up to about 300 cars.
Well, it's absolutely fascinating. And James Corliss, you were telling us earlier that an increasing amount of vehicle miles traveled is on these kind of things that are not the commuting kind of thing, right?
It's the number of trips. Yeah, the more vehicle miles traveled are for commutes, obviously, but a lot more trips now are for errand trips. Over 80% of all trips are not for work anymore.
So what would this, we're talking about this car sharing thing, what would this do nationally? A growth in this, the way I'm seeing it, if the vehicles are being used more, you don't need as many vehicles.
You don't need as many vehicles. I mean, the other thing that we haven't talked about here, which everybody underestimates, is, you know, over nearly 20% of your household budget, much higher if you live in a more auto-oriented metropolitan region, is if your money is spent on transportation. And most of that is vehicle ownership. You know, we all know the price of gas when it spikes and the impact that has. But the sunk cost into actually owning cars is huge. And for many families that have to own multiple vehicles, it's a real drain on your budget. Everybody knows you drive a car off the lot, it decreases in value right away. If you could take that money rather than spend it on an extra vehicle, have a car share, and spend that money on something like education or housing, and that actually builds wealth.
All right.
Ownership doesn't. So
let's go to Allison, joins the program from Homer. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Allison.
Yeah, hi, good morning.
Hi.
I live in Homer, but I am the classic person who comes into Anchorage once a week or once a month for about a week at a time. And the two things I was hoping you would talk about is, first of all, and I don't know what the situation is now, but for a long time, the taxi lobby has had a lot of power in defining where routes ran, and you couldn't take, there was no bus to the airport for a long time, and then when there was a bus, you couldn't take luggage on it. There was a baggage ban, so it was more for airport employees, but those of us flying into and out of the airport were forced to rent cars or take cabs.
Oh, wow. I love that. Thanks for telling me about that. I hadn't even thought about that.
Yeah, and again, I don't know what the current status of that is, but this was relatively recently, I'd say within the past 5 years. And but then I was also wondering if there are any plans or talk about an east-west and a north-south light rail in Anchorage, since they're just such hot spots along Midtown and from downtown to the south, it just straightaways, it would at least get people to regions, and then perhaps other more local transportation would help serve needs that way.
Yeah, well, I've talked to the well, thank you very much for your call, Allison. I've talked to Transportation Priority Project, because, you know, I kind of had an interest in what we could do with the light rail or maybe even a monorail. And she says it doesn't pencil out. So I don't really know.
This is James Corliss again. I think that there's a lot of folks that even 10 years ago would have said light rail doesn't pencil out. And I think there is such a wave, as I mentioned earlier, and especially around these streetcar systems. They're much cheaper, and they really do. If you can capture the value that is going to come to the land around those streetcar or light rail stations and do really innovative financing, that's the way to get at this. There's a group called Reconnecting America in Oakland, California. They have a whole book on streetcars. I really encourage you all there to bring some folks up to Anchorage and really rethink this, because I think this could be a nice spark to catalyze a lot of development in Anchorage in a way that is very helpful.
I can hear him now.
And I'd like to
go ahead, Allison. Is this Allison? Anita.
No, this is Anita from City Car Share.
Yes, go ahead.
I just wanted to add to that about the rails along the streets. In San Francisco, we have very strong transit for downtown, but there's a group who reopened the rail system along Market Street, and it is hugely popular. So even though we had the transit structure underground and buses along the corridors, people just love the rail cars. So I agree that it should be rethunk.
And these are these old vintage ones, right, Allison, where it's actually a group of volunteers. The irony here, which your listeners should love, is they're cheaper than buying the brand-new stuff. these old vintage cars, and what they found out is everybody loves to ride them. They love it.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
And
they're
to,
absolutely beautiful.
So you have to reclaim them from wherever third world
they
country they're sold
yeah,
to.
There's a run on them, I think, from most small Midwestern cities. So yeah. They're dust off those plans.
Allison and Homer, thanks for your call. Anything more to add?
No, I just hope that if you can add these resources to your website, that would be great for those of us who'd like to check it out after the program.
We'll do the best we can. I think Kristen would be up for that. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's Talk of Alaska. Our telephone number, 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK. An Anchorage call is local, 550-8422. It's email talk at aprn.org. And Sean of Heidelberg, you're on the air with Talk of Alaska.
Hi, Steve. Thank you. I really enjoy your forum. I originally wanted to talk to you about the you were talking about the Alaska Railroad, and I've heard, and I'm not sure, but on January 1st, that the state of Alaska sells blocks of tickets for the railroad, and mainly the tourism companies down south get over 90% of all the tickets.
Oh, wow.
Yes. And if you, I was in the military here in the early 70s. I got to travel that route from Anchorage to Fairbanks and in Denali, and it is so beautiful. But there is no way you could get yourself a ticket unless you went through a travel company, and probably from an outside travel company. And they're always encouraging you to bring relatives up from the lower 48 to come up here to see Alaska. Well, yeah, you could bring them up here, but you can't get a ticket. You can't get on that railroad.
Wow, I had no idea they were maxed out. I'm going to look into that, Sean. Thank you. That sounds like a news story.
The only thing that they do is in the wintertime when there is no tourism, they have their, I can't remember the name of it, but they have a thing where you can, you know, people in Talkeetna and around
there.
Yeah,
the flag stops, yeah.
The flag stops, yes. That is the only time that the Alaska Railroad, as far as I'm concerned, really helps the residents other than the hauling of natural resources,
yeah,
i.e. coal, oil.
Well, yeah, a lot of that, it was part of the mission. They've always thought that passenger service, they're willing to do it, but it needs to be subsidized because they don't see it as anywhere near a profit center. They see it as a money loser.
No, and you know, there's been talk of a Canadian access.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sure, we'd be willing to fund that, but would they be doing the same thing? Would we be able to access that route, or would it be sold out to Canadian companies?
Right. Sean, thanks. Great points. Great call from Heidelberg. Thank you, Sean. Thanks for your call. It's Talk of Alaska. We're talking about a bush angle on Anchorage transportation as Talk of Alaska continues.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from this APRN member station. Go deep inside Alaska, where the unparalleled meets the unexpected. Fairbanks emanates a quality of light, energy, and warmth found nowhere else on Earth. It's the unexpected Alaska. Fairbanks, located right in your own backyard, is full of activities from the mild to the wild. Experience summer's land of a midnight sun in Fairbanks. Information about attractions, travel, accommodations, and more online at explorefairbanks.com. This message sponsored by the Fairbanks Convention and Visitors Bureau.
An email query, this one from Sonny in Petersburg. Let's repo that depot. As a frequent visitor to Anchorage from Southeast on work-related trips, it infuriates me to say that beautiful train terminal at the airport that's only available to cruise ship passengers. Why can't we use that track from the airport to downtown year-round to get rural Alaskans downtown for business, conventions, etc.? Good point. I don't have a really good answer for that one either, Sonny. It's Talk of Alaska, and we're talking about transportation in Anchorage. Let's go to Dawn in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska. Hello, Dawn.
Hi there. Thank you for taking my call.
Yeah.
I would like to ask the host what he knows about the Safe Routes to School program and what the current funding situation is for that. We are starting a Safe Routes to School program over in the east side of Anchorage this year. We have a small task force. and teachers and parents and PTA and a couple of state legislators are on board.
And is the idea, I mean, I know that we have had in the past several times in Anchorage where school kids were, it was not safe for them to get to school, basically. Is this the idea of slowing down the traffic or creating special crosswalks or what?
Well, I think the idea is to make address the engineering first, primarily, and then start with educating the kids and the parents how to safely navigate their way to school.
Okay, so let's see if James Corliss has a comment on that.
Well, I'm really glad you brought that up because we didn't mention that, but actually when I was in California in 1999, we wrote the first Safe Routes to School law at the state level then, and that's now a national program, as your caller probably knows. The good news is, and believe me, you should send a thank you note to Congressman Oberstar from Minnesota, even though he's not your congressman. The Safe Routes to School program is maintained in his draft transportation bill that he just introduced. We don't have any dollar figures yet, so we don't know how much money is going to go to it. But it is in there, and we think it's a very important program. There's a whole coalition working on this, and they probably have a lot more of the details. But it's good news it's in there. We don't know how much. I know there's some eligibility concerns. For instance, they wanted it to be eligible for high schools. It isn't right now. But that's a good question. And I do think that kind of gets to, again, the heart of some of these sort of root causes of traffic. In Marin County, California, 20% of morning traffic is just parents driving their kids to school.
So. Whoa. Yeah. And you know, at the same time, we're having this problem, and we've done shows on this, the kids aren't getting out enough.
Well, I tell you what, can I just say, this is a fascinating, we talk about all these, we talked about public health earlier. This has not been sort of proven, documented, but anecdotally, a lot of the people in the health community and the mental health community, kids today, because they're driven around the backseat of cars, kids today have a very, very minimal ability to draw a map of their neighborhood.
Whoa.
It's a great thing for somebody to ask a, you know, 4 to 10-year-old to draw a map of their neighborhood. And this is a litmus test. And it's not just a neat little thing they can do. Apparently, there's a real need as we develop in those years to be able to spatially understand where we are. And that disconnection from their physical environment is should be a real warning sign to us.
Dawn in Anchorage?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Dawn. Sounds like you are on the right track and trying to push that. This one from William. Public transport builds a public space, which allows for moments of sharing. It can be positive for participants. It is a new frame of reference. Let's go to Louise in Anchorage. Welcome to Talk of Alaska, Louise.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a comment that I just recently moved in from the bush, from Eagle, in fact, and have been pleasantly surprised, actually, with the transit system here. I've been able to get to work every day at the library, and with no problem. It usually runs on time, and it's great. The only drawback it is it's just once an hour. The other drawback that I've had is that in terms of getting to banks and stores, everything is so spread out. It'd be really great if there were centralized locations where you could walk and be able to get to do your errands without having to jump in the car. Actually, someone gave me a car, so I've been able to use part transit and part car when I need to get around. But I have been pleasantly surprised. I mean, there's the Campbell Greenbelt and lots of places to walk and ride your bike. So, I mean, coming to Anchorage from the bush, I thought it was really, some good things about the transit system here.
Well, thanks, Louise. And you're talking mostly about the Midtown neighborhood there. And, you know, there is a planning effort underway to draw up the Midtown plan. I think one of the big issues is how can they keep the residential in there close to that business center?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's problematic. But then again, you know, they drew the line for the district right at the Seward Highway. And as anyone that knows the city knows, the minute you go to the other side of that highway, that's where all the residential is. So.
Right.
it's somewhat an artifact of where the map lines were drawn.
Yeah.
But it seems that there's more of a cultural mass building in Midtown, especially if they didn't have so many parking lots, you might actually get, you know, a kind of another downtown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess, isn't there, James Corliss, a kind of a basic real estate equation about parking lots? I guess we've discovered now that our parking lots in Anchorage, by and large, are too big. They're mostly unused. And there is a point where the value of the square footage doesn't support parking lots anymore. You want to get your retail up next to the street at that point.
It is, and I couldn't give you all the real estate back of the envelope stuff, but I did notice the few times I've been in Anchorage, it's and not unlike a lot of cities, you know, there's a lot of surface parking.
Yep.
And I, you know, one way to think about that is it's long-term land banking for something to come along in the future. The question just is, you know, how soon is your future?
Anita Daly of City Car Share, I wanted to call you back in here to give us some advice as to what the first steps might be to get such a program going in our biggest city here. Should we try and align the interests in the first place, clarify our goals, what?
Yes, I think definitely to align the interests and look at the downtown corridor. And one thing that works for car sharing and all forms of transit is to have your businesses and your residential areas within a distance where you can bike, walk, or take convenient public transit. And so car sharing, for example, works when you can actually walk out and get some milk and bread from the corner store and then walk home at night on your way home from work. And then when you really need a car, you can use it during a Saturday. So, yes, it's definitely an urban development issue where you need to look at your parking and how much parking you're providing and provide maybe tax breaks to local businesses to start up, for example.
In your program, then your vehicles have these stations where they are at, and the people then know where their car share vehicles are going to be in their neighborhood. So that's kind of, you need to build a pattern. You need to think in terms of that pattern then.
Yes, we do. We definitely put cars where we know people will be using them. But the city of San Francisco has a planning code where if you have a building of a certain number of units or higher, then you can only build so many parking spaces in there. And it's a less than one-to-one ratio, meaning there are fewer parking spaces than there are units in that building. And coupled with that, they also require that there's a car sharing space available. So that way, people who live in that building have access to a car share vehicle, and they don't have to they don't need a car to own a car. And there's not enough parking spaces anyways in those buildings. So those two policies coupled together works. And another policy that these developers can do is have parking that is unbundled, meaning that you don't have a unit matched with a parking space. You can sell them separately. So it lowers the cost for the buyer. They don't have to buy a place that comes with a parking space. They can buy it cheaper, and then somebody else can buy that parking space.
Okay.
They can have a choice of whether or not to have a car.
Anita, thanks so much for being with us today.
Sure. Thank you.
And James Corliss, I want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule there. I assume Alaskans could get in touch with Congressman Young about this.
Well, Congressman Young and Senator Begich, too, actually, on the Senate Commerce Committee, both hold very, very important positions on the transportation bill.
All right. Well, thank you very much for being with us again. Gooseberry Peter on the controls, Susanna Caldwell, and BD Trantini on the phones. I'm Steve Heimel. Thank you for listening.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network, by BP. Teaming up with Alaskans since statehood and together looking toward a bright future. And by Alaska Communication Systems. ACS offers high-capacity, high-speed bandwidth for business with speeds up to Gig E, connecting companies from the North Slope to Ketchikan to each other and the rest of the world. Views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at aprn.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.